Yo, Adrian.
Of course.
We're talking about film franchises today. Of course I gotta say it like that.
All right.
Yes, that is today's episode of the Cord Cutter Podcast. We are discussing film franchises on streaming, where to find them, and having a little bit of discussion about each franchise as we go down the list.
Yep.
We would be remiss if we didn't have one of the best guests from the Cord Cutter Podcast back to discuss these film franchises with us. Mr. Sean O'Connell, managing director of CinemaBlend.com and host of the Awards Blends podcast. Ward Blend. That's a mouthful. There we go. Yeah.
I ruined
the intro. Sorry.
This is like one of those special TV episodes when like Laverne and Shirley would show up on Happy Days.
It's a crossover episode. It's a crossover. We got our podcast verse going, the CB verse.
That's right.
What we're calling it.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's awesome to have you on the show, Sean. And we're going to talk about all these film franchises in just a little bit. But first, Adrian, you got a bit of news to get to?
Yeah, that's right. Apparently, for the first time in quite a while, Amazon and Netflix both left the Sundance Film Festival this year without buying anything, which is a huge surprise considering how committed those services are to getting more and more into the film business. Apparently, they're both changing their strategies in regards to films. Sean, what do you think this means for indies that are looking to get picked up by those services? Do you think that this is going to be the new trend for them?
Nothing lasts longer than a year in terms of these trends. So next year, it could be completely different. And it really just depends on the crop. It's possible that whatever was at Sundance this year just wasn't that appealing to those streaming services. I actually didn't hear of any major deals. Sometimes you'll hear of like Searchlight going for like $17 or $18 million for a high ticket film. But nothing really came out of Sundance that buzzy the way other films have in years past. So next year, I bet you Amazon and Netflix and all those guys are right back into the race. But it also speaks to how proactive those streaming services have been in terms of generating their own original content that they almost don't need to go into the film festivals looking to fill their schedule. Netflix alone has a full slate of films that they've already been working on and have them ready to drop. And I found it most interesting. Someone said in a source to that Business Insider story that we sourced to write this one, where the Netflix people, and I don't know how confirmed this is, but they were essentially saying, we have catalog deals with a lot of these studios, so if they were to pick up one of these movies, we'll just get it anyway. We'll get it anyway, right. And I never even thought about that. And I was like, oh, that makes total sense. Why not? Why blow your money on a splashy Sundance acquisition? And really, if you look at the box office for most of these Sundance movies, they don't pay off in the long run.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of money back out of them. Even Mudbound this year, which is an Oscar contender, when it finally did play theaters, no one really went to go see it because it's available to them on the Netflix streaming. So they're still trying to figure out that algorithm of why do I spend money on a theatrical movie when people are just going to watch it in their homes?
Yeah, makes sense. In other Netflix news that I know Mick is going to love.
Oh, boy.
Fuller House got a season 4 renewal. Mick, you have to talk to me about this. Why are people still watching this? You yourself have said that you can't stop watching it, even though it's a really weird combination of like adult themes and kind of the silliness of the original show. Is it just nostalgia or is something else going on here?
I don't know. I throw up my hands at this point, I guess would be the, because it seems like Netflix has this winning formula right now where the more something gets bashed by critics and people seem to hate on it, they're like, oh, by the way, this is one of our most popular shows or one of our most, we're getting a sequel to this already. So it's just one of those things.
You're talking about Bright. Yeah.
Yeah. there's other things too. I mean, Iron Fist was one of the, they had like huge numbers. Netflix was alleged, or there was alleged huge numbers behind Iron Fist viewings. And there's something about Fuller House. They've gotten, I can't say they've gotten better, but I can say they've probably gotten a little less adult oriented. There's less of Jodie Sweetin's like boobs just like awkwardly kind of stumbling around in the frame. So I will give them credit for that. They are kind of dialing it back, making it a little more family friendly the further they go on. However, I cannot believe that season 4 is happening, besides the fact that Of course, people are still watching it. And honestly, I'm a little excited for season four because I've already heard whisperings that there could be a Steve Urkel appearance.
Oh, yes, that's right. They did talk about that being a possibility.
That's not the same universe, is it? Are those characters in the same
Steve Urkel's been to Full House, yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I have to catch up on this.
I have to. I just want to see Jaleel White don the Urkel outfit as an adult. What is that going to look like? I just have no
idea.
It'll
look terrible. And it'll look terrible and embarrassing. That's what it's going to look
like. It's got a much deeper voice. He's like, did I do that?
It'll honestly be just like Fuller House in general.
Do you think green light seasons of these shows to almost save face and not look too embarrassing? Like, we're in it. Let's give it, you know, this many seasons before they quietly pull the plug. Or is Netflix, I don't really pay much attention. Are they okay about just saying, oh, this show didn't work, and they get rid of it?
Well, they really didn't start pulling stuff until like last year, right, Adrian? They finally were like, all right, we're going to start canceling our original series.
Yeah. And of course, before a couple of years ago, they didn't have that many original series anyway. Mm-hmm. So if something like Lilyhammer got canceled, well, nobody was fucking watching Lilyhammer anyway. So it didn't really matter. And it wasn't like that buzzy or anything. But yeah, they really started like bringing the hammer down. I feel like it was probably last summer when they started like kind of hardcore canceling stuff.
They dropped like three or four shows in very quick succession right after like the Get Down, I think, was like the start of it. And then it was just a ton. But for a while, I do think you're right. They were trying to save face because they even let like Hemlock Grove go for three seasons. And that show was just bad. Like, there was no redeeming value to Hemlock Grove.
I would like to apologize to Steve Van Zandt for that unnecessary jab at Lilyhammer, if he's listening.
Well, who was watching it? Was anybody watching Lilyhammer, really? I think it lasted like at least two seasons, though. So, I mean, it's not like it got dropped immediately.
Right. Well, there's no numbers to back this up, so who knows how well they're doing.
That's right. That's the advantage you have when you're playing this game. Absolutely.
I'm such a numbers guy and how like results of things produce. I cannot.
And we have no idea. Yeah.
Covering. Right. I don't get how you cover Netflix without knowing what's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
They must have a giant company-wide meeting where they all get together and look at like slides of results. And they're just like so happy seeing Full House season 3 at the top of the chart.
They don't even look at the numbers. They don't even know. I think they just keep it a tightly guarded secret, and everyone just assumes things are doing well and greenlights it blindly. Like, we're still growing numbers. Anyway, we transition to the weekly queue. Sean, I believe you have the spotlight today. You've been watching Parenthood?
Yeah. So, because I have been running a movie section for the better part of two decades, I don't watch a lot of television. Occasional shows here and there, but we tend to catch up with stuff late. Like, especially Breaking Bad was something we caught up with late, right? Like, we were a couple seasons behind, and then, thank God for Netflix, we just streamed through everything. So people have always been saying, you have to catch up with Parenthood. It's a fun show. And we have two boys, and they're now about to become 10 and 14. Their birthdays are in a couple weeks. So we started watching this, and I totally get it. Like, it's very addicting. The first half of the first season, we were kind of fed up with this obnoxious Northern California family. But now we're totally on board with all of their soap opera dramas. And it's fun to see people like Michael B. Jordan come through for like a multi-episode arc. Or Alexandra Daddario, whatever, from Baywatch.
The Dario.
She's in it now for a multi. And it's like, oh, here are all these people, because I forget how many years behind we are in it. And now my wife is also doing Gilmore Girls. And she's comparing like the Lauren Graham personalities, and
because
we never watched Gilmore Girls, and I'm still not really watching that. It's weird. Like, our streaming habits are odd because my wife gets up at 5, and she's got like an hour and a half before she starts waking up the rest of the house. So she'll watch something, and so she binged through like a number of different shows. But Parenthood is the one that like we watch every night. We'll try to get through like two episodes. But because we're old, we're like asleep by 10, so we have to start watching it at like 8. But like, our kids are still around and they're annoying, right? Like, they just want to like talk to us and stuff. So we have to like kick them out or like encourage them to go play like Minecraft or something so that we can watch a show about
Sean, these kids really should be better trained by this point. Don't they know not to try to talk to you?
It's kind of embarrassing that they want to interact. And and learn from their parents. And we'd rather watch a show about fictional parents and the problems that they're having. But it's been great. Amazing. And it's been, I'm now, it's like a under the gun type thing, because there was a story that like they're going to remove Parenthood from Netflix, and we still have, we're in the middle of season three. So we have
always a stressful
six
situation.
Seasons. I know. So we're racing the clock, and I'm skipping ahead to, now I've done this too. I skip ahead to the next season to see how many episodes there are so we can budget our time. And then I read the little synopsis along the back, and I'm like, what happened to Julia? I don't understand. Like, so I'm a little annoyed at myself for that. I hate that there are like spoilers sitting there waiting for you to jump ahead if you want to, because I can't control those impulses. I have to jump ahead and start reading about the little quick synopsis of what's happening to Zeke.
Yeah, I've done that on shows too.
All right, Adrian, what you watching?
I watched Deidre and Lainey Rob a Train, which is a Netflix movie. It's about two teen sisters with screwed up parents who need to make ends meet when their mom goes to jail. And the smartest among the two teens decides she's just going to start robbing trains. There's a train tracks go right past their house, and she decides they're just going to start robbing trains.
It stars in the 1840s.
No, it's modern day. It's modern day. They're in a tiny town in Idaho where there's, you know, not much to do. There's not many ways to make money. And, you know, the family's behind on a lot of bills, and now both their parents are gone, so they need to get some money. It stars Ashley Murray, who, if you watch Riverdale, you will know her as Josie on Riverdale. And Rachel Crowe is the two sisters. It's really just a funny, sweet, weird movie. And once you find, they wait until almost the end of the movie to reveal why their mom did what she did that got her in prison. And once they reveal that, it will kind of break your heart a little. It's really a pretty good movie. It's worth watching.
Solid. I've been watching The End of the Fucking World. Well, it's End of the Bleep World, but it's, I don't know, it's hard to put that in words. But it's...
Well, you did put it in words. You said fucking it.
Well, yeah, but they don't... That's not what the title says. Anyway, I'm getting off track. I've only watched one episode of it so far, so I'm going to save my highlighted portion of what I think of it until next week. And... But I'll say, first episode, really good. Love the humor, especially if you love British humor. I think you're going to like it.
Cool.
Transitioning to the main event, film franchises on streaming. We kick things off with, as we often do, Netflix. There's quite a few Marvel films on, well, I shouldn't say quite a few. There's literally a few currently. Notable lineup,
though.
Yeah,
there's like three or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and Civil War. But obviously, there's some missing... You know, there's like a lot of missing ones, but that's a notable lineup to be sure. If you want to check those out, if you haven't watched any of the new ones, here's my question for you, Sean. Do you think that when Disney launches their streaming service, do you think they're just going to rip everything off of, they're going to pull the Marvel movies, they're going to pull the Star Wars films and keep it for their own? Or do you think they'll leave just like a little bit for Netflix just to kind of entice people over?
They will rip everything that they have away from anyone else.
Yeah.
And they will put it on their streaming service, and they'll make you pay extra for it. And why wouldn't they? I mean, they're investing in these franchises and these properties for a reason. They own them. And they're going to take everything away. That they're like one of the very few companies that can really set up their own streaming service, especially now if this Fox deal goes through and they own even more back titles. Like, everyone's talking about the Fox deal and how it's going to lead to, oh, the X-Men and the MCU, and that's a part of it for sure. But it was Disney wanting to increase their back catalog and have all these Fox titles that they can also put on this new streaming service and television shows. I think they have access to Fox television shows through this too. So
it's crazy, but at the same time, kind of exciting, because, you know, Hulu's kind of like the next best alternative to Netflix, but they're not quite, I wouldn't say they're quite on the level of Netflix in terms of streaming, but with what Disney's planning, or what you think they're planning, it seems like Netflix would be like, whoa, we got something to worry about here.
They are, but Netflix is almost, I mean, they're not nearly as strong as Disney, but they're developing their own back catalog of things now that will still make it worth, like, I don't go to Netflix anymore. Early on, I used to go to just see what old movies they had, but their selection of old movies is so crappy that there's nothing good there. So it's really just old TV shows and new programming that I go to Netflix for. I can't even find, like, I'll be reminded of a movie that is right in that wheelhouse that I want to show to the boys, and I'll go to search for it on Netflix and nothing's there. Like I've been very disappointed by the amount of back catalog movies that they have to offer. So I don't feel like that's a service that I rely on them for. I go other places to get those films.
That's fair.
Makes sense.
Definitely. Which on that note, Netflix did step up their game a little bit recently, put in the entire, well, not the entire, but a bulk of the Batman catalog. We got what? Batman. We have Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, and Batman Begins. Is there any that I've forgotten there?
I think that's it.
Yeah. Which, if you were to show, have you shown your children the Batman film, Sean?
Yes. It was funny to them to watch the Schumacher ones. In addition to, my oldest has watched Batman Begins. And so he's used to like the Adam West series because we watched a lot of that.
Yeah.
And then he watched the Schumacher ones. I'm trying to think if we watched the two Tim Burton ones. I don't think we watched the two Tim Burton ones. I think one day we just popped on the one with Jim Carrey as the Riddler. And they were super into that because it was fun. It's cartoonish and it's over the top. But then we watched Batman Begins, and my teenager, it was like a light bulb going on. And he was like, what the fuck? Like this is what a Batman movie can be? And I was
completely different thing. Yeah.
So we're gearing up to watch The Dark Knight. But I even think The Dark Knight is kind of like over his head, sort of. You know, it's pretty advanced, and I don't know if he's gonna get like the Joker putting the knife in the dude's mouth and talking about his fake upbringing and all this different stuff. So and then of course they've seen, you know what was interesting, they watched Man of Steel and they watched Batman vs Superman, and I couldn't pay my kids to go see Justice League. Like they had no interest in it whatsoever.
Wow.
So it's interesting that the DC model has not hooked them at all. And they watched the Flash television show, but they have no interest in the Ezra Miller one. So it's unusual how the superhero movies have evolved past them.
That's wild. All right. Of those films, I'm going to ask you, Sean. I'm going to ask you, Adrian.
Okay.
Definitive Batman villain. Who's the best one out of those batch of films? Best performance.
Just of the ones that's on Netflix.
Yeah, just out of those.
Yeah.
Because obviously I think most you guys would probably say Heath Ledger. If we included Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Maybe Tom Hardy.
I got to say Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman.
Okay.
Because I just enjoyed how she, the accidental way that she turned herself into Catwoman, and the dichotomy of, like, when Anne Hathaway played her, we never got to see her normal side. She was just Catwoman from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And so we got to see frazzled Michelle Pfeiffer and then totally, you know, slinky, sultry Michelle Pfeiffer, and she sold both aspects.
Adrian, who you got?
I'm going to go Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Really?
Old school.
Okay.
Yeah. Just because, it's one of those things where I was a kid when the movie came out, and just nostalgia, I think, from going to see it. And after thinking, you know, this, I don't know why this is going to work. It's Michael Keaton as Batman. And then going to see it and really enjoying it. And it just enjoying all of it. And
I think it's something to do with the age range, because I never identified with Jack Nicholson's Joker, but I was young, like super young, when that movie, I may have even just been born when that movie came out.
You probably did not see it when it came out.
Yeah. Heavily identify with the Joel Schumacher ones. Not a big fan of Batman and Robin. I knew it was trash even when I was a kid. But Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face and Jim Carrey as the Riddler, that was a film I watched again and again in my childhood. To the point that I remember the running ad with the soundtrack beforehand with Seal behind the bat signal singing Kiss from a Rose, Kashmir by Led Zeppelin while Robin's riding the motorcycle. Like, I had that movie down from, like, everything. So that's always the one that I go to. Love Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. Maybe even more than the later one in The Dark Knight. I don't know. Maybe that's a little... A little bit of a hot take.
Tommy Lee Jones does not agree with you. He hates everything about that portrayal.
Yeah, I know. I know. I got love for it, though. All right, moving away from Batman onto the Godfather franchise. And this is something that Adrian and I have discussed on past episodes when we always refer to The Matrix, how I feel that sometimes sequels are better left unwatched in the future era. Maybe like with Godfather 1, great. Godfather 2, Awesome. Godfather 3. Do you need to watch Godfather 3 to fully appreciate the trilogy?
I mean, need is a strong word, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I don't want to get, I don't want to live in a world where I pretend it doesn't exist. It's still out there and it's closure for, you know, a lot of the characters, but am I going to sit down one night and dial it up? No, not necessarily. So, but I have to acknowledge that it's there.
How do you feel about it, Adrian? Oh, well, I kind of already know how you stand with Matrix, but Godfather, have you seen the Godfather films?
Yeah, I've seen all of them and, you know, I mean, obviously the original, but I forget about, you know, sequels not needing to be watched. Most of the time they don't need to be made. So, okay. You know,
so you're saying that you could watch Godfather and be completely fine if you never saw Godfather 2?
Yeah.
Man, I love Godfather 2. I don't know if I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with 3, though. How about you, Sean?
I mean, I would argue that 1 and 2 are essentially one giant movie.
Yeah.
So I'll just pretend that they're one big movie that never got a sequel. Like, that's a healthy way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that. I actually think I read the novel before I saw the films way back when, and I think that's kind of... It was a combination of the two because they did the flashback sequences throughout, like, the first film, if I remember.
But those
right.
movies fall into a situation with me where I don't want to watch them on my television. If the only reason I would really want to take the time to go back and revisit those movies is if mm-hmm. someone were bringing them back into a theater, because they yeah. and potentially showing them on film, because the way that Coppola shot them is the cinematography is so deep and rich and it looks so beautiful with the grain of film that if a retribution house or a film festival is bringing back original print screenings of those movies, I would not sit down on Netflix with the vast array of things that are at your fingertips and dial up The Godfather, because I just don't think that's how those. And not that this, I don't want this to sound like a film snob type thing. It's not that. But like, I don't want to watch those movies on my television. It's just the screen's not good enough for the quality that those films deserve.
I've never had that problem. I've never thought about that personally, but it's an interesting perspective. Yeah, some films do deserve the big screen treatment, so I can definitely respect yeah. that. Godfather franchise once again on Netflix. Hellraiser 1 and 2. Here's one Mm-mm. that in the age of Stephen, like, how many Stephen King adaptations have we had and upcoming?
They're coming back.
A million.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of yeah. them are coming back.
Yeah.
There's so many out there. But Clive Barker, this is kind of just like what he's had. This is kind of where he's had. I read The Thief of Always as a child, and I always thought that would make an amazing movie. It's never happened, obviously. I assumed Clive Barker was dead. He's still alive, I believe.
Yeah.
No, it was just one of those.
I know.
Yeah. It's just, I assumed the reason these things weren't happening, I was like, Clive Barker must be dead. There's no more. But no, he's alive and well. And I don't know. How do you guys feel about the Hellraiser franchise? Adrian, was this one that your mother forced you to be subjected to as a child?
No, this was one that was on. They used to be on TV a lot, I feel like, when I was still living with my mom and she had cable. And so I would come upon them when I was just searching through the channels and leave it there for a while and end up terrified and having to turn it away. Do not talk to me about Pinhead. I can't do it.
It is some of the more twisted horror films out there. Sean, what are your thoughts on the Hellraiser films?
Well, long before there was streaming, when I was a kid growing up, I went to an actual store and rented videotapes. And yeah. the thing that got me into this in the first place was a girl who worked at a video store who, when I was an influential teenager, would hand me stacks and stacks of videotapes. And I'd go in once a week and she would just hand me stacks of them and say, go home and watch all of this. And it was everything. It was musicals. It was Westerns. And we ran through the entire horror gamut. And so for the longest time, I was into like Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and all of these franchises that I just, you know, mm-hmm. mainlined right into my veins. And all of them were grounded to a certain extent where I could at least recognize the world, especially like Elm Street. You know, it was like a suburb and it was these kids who were older than me, but recognizable. And then we got into like yeah. Phantasm. And then we get into like Hellraiser. And that's when, like you say, it went to another area where I was like, I don't get what's happening anymore. This is supernatural and it's weird. Yeah. And Pinhead's a bizarre character and I've never seen anything. Like, even Freddy Krueger to me seemed like a guy, right? Like, as someone I could at least identify with.
Yeah.
But no, the Clive Barker world. And then I tried to get into some of his books because I loved Stephen King growing up too. And even his books were a little bit too advanced for me. So yeah, he's on another plane altogether.
That might be you just touched on something interesting there, because I think that's something that I've always thought is the difference. You can kind of fundamentally relate to the fears that Stephen King brings.
Yeah.
Clive Barker is just kind of on a very different sci-fi level. You're talking about other dimensions. You're talking about vampires that trap children in different worlds for years at a time. Right. It's just like it's a crazy different world that you're dealing with that may not translate as well as, say, like, you know, an evil dog or a prom girl who...
Give me the Lost Boys, right? Oh, yeah. They're surfer biker dudes who happen to turn into vampires. I got that. And I can fight them with garlic in the bathtub. I'm all over that. But Pinhead? No, can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Mm-mm.
They're still, I think they're working on developing a new film for that, aren't they?
That's been kicking around for a long time, but I'm not quite sure.
All right, this next one, it's already in my notes that you are all over this franchise like white on rice. Lethal Weapon. I've never seen it, Sean, and I don't know if it's something that I need to see.
Why haven't you watched? I talked to you about this when we
did the new one Netflix. Because your opinion doesn't matter enough to me.
At the end of December, why, or whatever month it was, why haven't you watched Lethal Weapon 1 and 2 yet?
I've been busy.
A serious problem.
But also, yeah, no, my only experience with the Lethal Weapon franchise is the episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where the gang recreated an episode of the franchise. But I don't understand, why is this a film that I need to see, Sean?
Who didn't love you enough in your life, Mick, to deprive you of the joy of the Lethal Weapon
there
franchise?
There you go.
The first one is, without question, one of the greatest entries in the category of action cinema, and buddy cop action cinema more than anything, and which is a genre all to itself, and it really kicks off with that first Lethal Weapon. There have been other good entries in that. That's probably one of my favorite types of a film of all time, the buddy action comedy, but not one that leans too heavily into the jokey joke side of it, where Adam Sandler is involved. Sandler and Damon Wayans Jr. Is that they're in one together where he has to like transport him somewhere. But anyway,
I remember Shane Black puts a gun in his butt. It was a weird scene.
Oh God.
it's the one part I remember.
The first Lethal Weapon is the best of the series, and the others are somewhat carried by the greatness of that one. And it's the law of diminishing returns. They get worse as they go, without a doubt. But that first one is serious enough. And Mel Gibson's so good in it because he's suicidal. Like he's a widow. He lost his wife. He's at wit's end. He just wants to kill himself. And Danny Glover becomes the partner that just tries to keep him alive long enough. And the best part about that movie is that there's so much attention on Mel Gibson's character, but it's Danny Glover's story. Like he's the guy who knows the person who's involved in the drug trade, and it's his family who's at risk. And Riggs is just the guy who comes along at the right time, who can basically help him in this situation of need. And it's deadly serious, and the action set pieces are great, and it gets really dark. And man, it's one of the best action films ever made. And then 2 is fun, and 3 sucks.
Stop.
And 4 rebounds.
Stop. Stop it, 2.
But wait, but 4. At least rebounds for a badass Jet Li fight at the very end.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, Jet Li's in 4. I know that much. He disarms
4
the
is
gun.
Bad. Yes, he does. He does it really fast. And then there's a good, they have a good fight at the end on a pier that is like just one. It's a pretty brutal fight with like broken bones and people get impaled. And it's put 4 on and just skip to the end. The rest of it's bad. Chris Rock is in it with a really tone-deaf, like, mistaken for being gay subplot. Remember Danny Glover keeps thinking that Chris Rock is, like, hitting on him? But he's going to be his son-in-law?
It.
Oh, it's awkward. The humor in those movies is really dated for 3 and 4. And God forbid, if they ever do a 5, they seem pretty serious about mounting a 5th one. Mm-hmm. And they're so old now. But they were at a tribute for Richard Donner, who's the director of all of them, and the two of them together, Danny Glover and Mel Gibson, their chemistry is undeniable. Like they're just together on a stage riffing about Richard Donner and making fun of each other. And they were just funny in the moment. It was really good. And watching that was the one thing where I was like, oh my God, you know what? They could do a 5th one and I'd be okay with it. They were funny in the moment. So
see, Adrian, that's how you pitch something. I feel fully committed to watching it now.
Just give the first one a try. And if you're not hooked by the first one, then you're dead to me.
I wish we could visualize Adrian's eye rolls on the podcast. those long periods of silence, that is, anytime you hear silence in the podcast, that is Adrian rolling her eyes into oblivion.
So, at you, Mick. Always weapon, at you.
Definitely what I want to check out. One that I checked out the first one. I'm not sure I want to check out the second one. I'm not even sure I want to have that appear in my suggestions. Human Centipede 1 and 2. Also on,
you know,
there.
What?
Have either of you ever made it through both movies?
Damn you, Mick, for making me even think about those fucking movies. I have to say, you already know I'm not a big fan of horror, okay? I had heard about the movie. I knew it was a horror movie. That was all I needed to know. And then I was in, like, Best Buy or something one day and saw the DVD sitting there. And I'm like, I'll go ahead and read the back and see what this is actually about. Fuck the whole series. Like, no. No, I've never watched any of it. No. Just looking at the art on the box was terrifying. I had nightmares about that for literally days.
I watched the first one with my grandparents. So I was maybe like 12 or 13 at the time.
Why?
You know, everybody's
Why
like,
did that happen?
It's a disgusting movie. And I was like, you know, I wanted to be cool. My grandparents would, you know, they're not in touch. So that we're at Premiere Video, the video store near our house. I was like, hey, rent this. And my sister's like, yeah, tell them to rent this. So we like sit there. And yeah, we got to like the first time the dude poops in the girl's mouth when they're all sewn together. And I was like,
stop.
I was like, we can turn this off. I don't want to watch it anymore.
Next. What's the next series we're talking about?
No, but first off, let's stop and break this down for a second. Someone had an idea for this movie, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not just like wrote a script.
Yep.
And then they took this idea to other people and said to them, this is what I want my movie to be. And other people said, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only that, they made a sequel to that.
Right.
Yeah.
And they convinced actors, hey, listen, this is what the movie's going to be about. For 20-something days while we film this, your face is going to be in her ass the whole time. And those actors were like, where do we sign up? Like, this is going to, my career is going places after this one.
Oh, God. Yep.
Do you know how many times on the set of Human Centipede they all said to themselves, they were like, you know, Renee Zellweger started in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie and look where she is now.
Yeah, yes. Probably.
And none of those actors have gone on to do anything because every audition they're in, they're like, you were in Human Centipede? Oh my God, get out of here.
All right. Moving on. Let's just put this all in the past behind us. Oceans 11 through 13, all on Netflix as well. Is it the best heist film franchise out there? Yes or no? What do you guys think?
Yes.
I can't think of another franchise of heist films. I can only think of
single. Now you see me, and now you see me too.
Well, I wasn't that impressed with that, so there you go.
That's magic in heists.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the magic.
Card tricks.
Definitively. I've never watched 13. I've seen 11 or 12. Is 13 worth a watch?
Yes.
I always fall off on the third film, it seems.
13's very fun. And Ellen Barkin is in it and she's a lot of fun. And it's just, to me, it was just getting that cast back together. They all seem like they're having too much fun doing it. And that's what I liked about the trailer for this, Ocean's 8. All of those actresses together look like they're just going to have a blast together. And so I don't think you go to those movies looking to see a really tight, you know, conceived heist. You just watch really pretty people have fun together for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Bada bing, bada boom. Netflix. Dunzo. That's all the notable stuff on there. We move on to Hulu with the Bill and Ted franchise. This is one that admittedly I've never seen, but I know I should. I know that. And I know that there's a script written for the third film. Whether or not it's ever going to happen is up in the air. Should it happen, though? In either of yours, honest opinion.
Absolutely. Again, when you get the original people from the film wanting to do more of it, like passionately wanting to do more of it, this is not my guy Bruce Willis, who they're waving a paycheck in front of to stand in front of a camera and pretend that he's doing another Die Hard movie. These are guys who really believe in the concept of what this third movie can be. And mm-hmm. it's supposed to follow the two characters as they are middle-aged now with kids of their own. And it's going to involve some sort of weird time travel where they're going to go back and interact with themselves from younger generation, and technology lets them do this. But the most depressing part is that every time that these guys, Keanu Reeves, can't get a project off the ground, he comes back and he's like, I've got a script. We got Alex Winter. He wants to do it too. We have a director in place, Dean Parasot, who did Galaxy Quest. And the studio's like, nah, we'd rather just reboot with like younger kids and make new Bill and Ted. But there is no new Bill and Ted. It's just those are Bill and Ted. That's it. Those are the guys. Stop trying to reboot something and give us that. They did Dumb and Dumber with like When Harry Met Lloyd. And it was kids who weren't Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniel. And it was, what was the point?
Yeah, absolutely. Adrian.
So yes, do it. Do it.
What do you think? Yes or no?
Well, like Sean was saying, considering that the original actors really want to do this, I think it could turn out well, especially considering that they want to just follow them in middle age with adult responsibilities and families. And that would be something we haven't seen before. And I think that could actually work as opposed to a reboot, which would just be bullshit.
Yeah, especially in this age where we're in another resurgence of Keanu Reeves, where he's got the John Wick films going. You know, he's already, his celebrity's already peaking yet again. I don't think he ever really drops off. Well, it's debatable. But he's...
Bottom line, see these movies, Mick. What's the matter with you? Dude, they're great.
I know. I'm not a child of the 80s. I guess.
And Bill and Ted is one of those movies where, like, you've heard that it's good and it's better than you actually think it is. Like, it's goofy and silly, but it's also really clever and funny in places where you'll be like, oh my gosh. You'll be surprised at how clever it is. And you'll be like, oh my gosh, this is so much better than I actually thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be something like... one joke, stupid premise comedy, but it's much smarter than that.
If you didn't like the fact that I haven't seen Bill and Ted yet, you're really not going to like the fact that I've only seen the first movie of the next franchise we're going to talk about, Karate Kid 1-3 on Hulu, also the Hilary Swank, the fourth one, the next one. No Jaden Smith one, unfortunately.
Did you grow up in a Amish town or... a cave?
The jungle. He grew up in the jungle.
I guess my parents just weren't big on 80s films growing up. I was either watching like new stuff in the 90s or, I saw The Karate Kid with my parents. Right. And I thought the whole thing just ended after that crane kick to the face. Didn't know there was a second or third. Completely oblivious.
Second one is outstanding. Adrian, have you seen the second one?
I have not.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. Don't put it all on me. She was going to stay silent until you called her out.
Guys.
But, so, okay. I remember seeing the first movie and just not, maybe I was too young or something. I don't know. It just didn't really do anything for me. So I never watched any of the sequels.
I can understand that then, I guess. Second one to me is as good as the first. But again, like this is right when I was growing up. So there was one of those ones where like there was a perfect music video that went with the the movie, so it was on MTV constantly.
That helps.
It was always in rotation.
That helps a lot. Yeah.
And as a movie junkie, growing up when movie clips weren't as available because we didn't have YouTube or the internet, you just loved seeing clips of this movie that you enjoyed in a movie. So there would be like scenes from the final fight of Karate Kid 2 peppered throughout this music video, and that to me alone was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You can stop at 1 and 2. That's definitely one of those franchises where the first two are really good and then they just tail off completely.
Any love for the Hilary Swank version? Considering,
no.
I mean, this,
none whatsoever.
No love for it. All right.
None. That is, like Adrian said earlier in the podcast, there are just certain sequels where you have to say, why did you do this?
Yeah.
They called it the next Karate Kid. Like they truly were trying to reboot a different franchise or go in a different direction, and it didn't work. Because in the third one, Macchio came back, but he was clearly older, and it was, like, uncomfortable. So they knew they had to, like, he's no longer the Karate Kid.
They couldn't use him anymore,
No, he was done. He's done. And he had, like, a fresh-faced. Yeah, right, exactly. He came in, he was like, it was bad.
Okay, I'm definitely checking out The Karate Kid. I'll catch up on that one. Here's a film franchise that I've actually seen a decent amount of for some weird reason. I don't know if there was like a big marathon on Sci-Fi at some point in my childhood. The Godzilla versus franchise. This is Godzilla versus Destoroyah, King Ghidorah, Mechagodzilla, Mechagodzilla Part 2, Space Godzilla, Tokyo SOS, Final Wars.
And that's a lot.
1998 Godzilla film, which was, yeah. I think it was 1998.
The Roland Emmerich one?
Yes, yes.
With Matthew Broderick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, those are all up on Hulu. Of course, Godzilla King of Monsters, I believe, is coming out in 2019?
Yes, I think that's right.
Right. We're going to see a lot of these monsters in there. What do we know about the new film so far about in terms of that? Can you speak about any of that?
It's part of this cinematic universe that they're trying to launch. It's been referenced in Kong Skull Island. They're using that Monarch company to tie everything together. But there's going to be a weird time jump because I think this Godzilla one, Godzilla King of Monsters, is going to be set after the most recent Godzilla one. So it's modern day. So I'm not sure how they're going to bridge that gap. Like, you have people like Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson who were brought up in Kong Skull Island. Why wouldn't you keep them around for your franchise? Yeah. Because otherwise you have Aaron Taylor Johnson from the first one who nobody cares about. So I think they're just going in a totally different direction because they mistakenly killed off Bryan Cranston. Spoiler. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They should have kept him around because he would have been somebody who could build a franchise around at the very least.
Yeah.
Absolutely. By the way, Adrian, you said that's a lot of movies. Some of those movies are actually like post the, because they kind of have the old classic Godzilla look, you know, where it's like clearly a dude in a suit. They were still making those types of films. I think Tokyo SOS is dated 2004. There was just like a genre of like Japanese people who just like classic Godzilla. So they're like, let's keep it rolling with the guy in the suit.
Yeah.
It's true.
So check them out.
I haven't watched any of those movies.
You haven't watched any of them? First off,
they just don't interest me.
They're amazing.
All right.
Mechagodzilla is okay, whatever. It's not everybody's thing. I get it. I'm not gonna make this my hill to die on. I'll just move on. Because there's plenty of film franchises on other platforms we can talk about. We've already talked about Harry Potter at length with Kelly West on a couple episodes ago. If you haven't listened to that one, go ahead and listen to that episode.
I'm shocked that Kelly talked at length about the Harry Potter franchise.
Oh man, we really talked it up. Indiana Jones is the next one we talk about. It's on Amazon Prime Video. They got every single one, I believe. They had like two versions of The Last Crusade. I don't know what the difference was between them. They all, for all intents and purposes, they looked like the same movie. So maybe Amazon was just trying to trick you into buying one. I don't know what the deal was with it.
Interesting. With there.
But this is another one that I've only seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I've only seen bits and pieces of it. I'm completely out of the loop on this film franchise. Fill me in, guys. First off, I already know I shouldn't watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So tell me what the allure is to Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
It's just fucking perfect adventure. I would definitely say I've heard that some people like Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, which is the third one. I'm mixed on that one, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. Maybe I'd like it better if I saw it now. You need to see Raiders, which you have, and I would also suggest you watch Temple of Doom, because it's just great and kind of batshit and lots of crazy stuff happens. And you need to do that.
There's nobody better than Spielberg at those types of movies.
Yeah.
He is the quintessential popcorn blockbuster director. And the man just knows how to pace those movies. He knows how to stage a set piece. There are sequences in each of those movies that are some of the most fun and most energetic and just iconic scenes. And beyond that, it's Harrison Ford at his finest. Like, he's so great in that role. But everybody around him, all the villains in all of the different movies are so good. Obviously, Raiders is one of the most, it's a flawless movie. But if I were to put either of them on, I'd put Temple of Doom on before Raiders, because it's so, as Adrian said, it's just so batshit crazy. And there's so much cool stuff that happens in it that you watch it now and you almost can't believe how much they got away with of scenes that just really push the envelope in terms of terrifying the audience. I mean, there's the signature scene is, you know, Mahram, the guy pulling a heart out of some guy's chest. But then there's this amazing set piece with Indy trapped in a thing that's closing on him, and the spikes are coming down, and Willie has to reach into a dark hole that bugs are crawling all through. And they're like, they're not bugs. They're like serious motherfucking bugs. They're like, and you know, to go back and watch it now, I'm still horrified. And then there's this amazing mine car sequence in Temple of Doom that if any other hack director tried to pull it off, it would look like hot garbage. And Spielberg is the best. He's the best at it. So you watch those movies to marvel at the craft of someone who decides they're going to take an action movie seriously and deliver the goods time after time after time.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be working, well, I think they're working on a fifth, and I just, after Crystal Skull, I just don't know if I have any hope that that will actually be good. I can't.
Really?
Well, and just because he's getting older, like, with each passing year, Harrison Ford gets older and older. You just can't recreate. I mean, I'm opposed to the idea of recasting that role, because that role is him. Tried and true. And if he can't do it anymore, then I think that they just need to stop doing it. Because, you know, they tossed around the names. They were like Bradley Cooper or Chris Pratt as the new Indiana Jones. And I'm like, you know what? Could I see it? Yeah. All right. I could see them trying it. It's just not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same.
Right.
You don't think they should continue on with like Shia LaBeouf?
Don't talk to me about Shia LaBeouf.
Just turn this podcast off. Sorry that you made it this far. Thank you for listening to us.
Clearly, with that fourth movie, they were trying to get it to where they could spin it off and have Shia LaBeouf starring as the adventurer, and it didn't work, and we need to just forget about it.
Can we talk about that scene where Shia swings through the jungle with the monkeys? Because it is one of the most embarrassing scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And the fact that Spielberg, who I adore, Spielberg is on a pedestal for me, that he let that stay in his finished movie is dumbfounding. It's one of the worst, poorly executed scenes I've ever seen in an action film.
I actually don't remember that scene. I think I've just blocked a lot of that movie out. All I really remember about it is that there were Nazis and aliens for no good reason. Right. And somehow Indiana Jones survived a nuke by locking himself in a refrigerator, which he never should have been able to get out of once he was in it.
Right. Now, nuke the fridge became the new jump the shark phrase.
Yeah.
And there was actually a website dedicated to times when modern movies nuked the fridge. But like later in that movie, Shia LaBeouf is in a Jeep and he gets caught up in a vine. And the vine pulls him up into the air, and then he like Tarzan swings alongside, like from one vine to the next, alongside all of these CGI monkeys that like swing along with him.
It sounds reliably terrible.
He like swings himself back into the Jeep that's been like chasing, and it's like
we can allow no more time to this terrible movie.
It was awesome. Let's just say it was awesome.
There's nothing else we have to talk about it. We're going to move on to Back to the Future, which is on HBO. I would say if out of all the films we've discussed right now, from start to finish, probably the most consistently solid film franchise on here. Would you guys agree with that?
That's fair.
I don't know if I've ever seen the third one.
They go to the Wild Wild West.
Yes. And I remember as a kid thinking that seems stupid. And I don't think I ever watched it.
It definitely isn't as good as the first two, but it does. It has its place. I think third one's decent enough.
It is super cute and charming. It's a very sweet idea. It's more along the lines of the first one, where it's, you know, it's one basic story set in a different time period. Mm-hmm. And it's more like where Marty got sent back to the 50s to sort of be the fish out of water. This is Doc in his favorite place. And then Marty trying to help him. But they have so much fun with a lot of the Western cliches of the shootout at dawn and all the, you know, because Buford Tannen is the earlier generation of Biff. And it's just, I think it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yes. Great one. Nobody's trying to bang their mom in the third one. So that one's nice.
That we know of.
Yeah, that we know of. Maybe, you know, we're not for sure.
We have to admit the second one is the best of the three.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with that.
What an amazing screenplay. That is one of the smartest screenplays in franchise history.
Fast and the Furious franchise on HBO. We have the Fast and the Furious, Too Fast, Too Furious, Fast and Furious, and the Fate of the Furious. I could not tell you which ones those were in the franchise. The only one I really know is Tokyo Drift. And I've heard that's like overall the worst one.
Worst of them. Well, yeah, no, I haven't seen all of those.
The fourth one's the worst one. Fourth one is truly horrible. That's so Fast and Furious.
How does this film franchise continue to survive and thrive?
The Rock.
He helped, that's for sure. Because at the fifth one, they finally figured out what they are. And they stopped trying to be something different. They stopped trying to be serious. And they embraced the cornball soap opera aspect of what the series really is. And so with 5, 6, and 7, and then 8 to a certain extent, but even 8 sort of fell off, they just decided that whatever they threw against the wall, whether it stuck or not, they were going to try it. So they brought in like Kurt Russell playing this shadowy government agent, or they brought in The Rock, and they brought in Gal Gadot, and all of these characters that if you stopped for a minute and asked yourself like, really, could they, like, is that, but they don't care. They barrel through. And they got better with their set pieces. The set pieces from 5, 6, and 7 are truly impressive. The them pulling the giant vault through Rio is amazing in Fast 5. Fast 5 is a great movie. Fast 5 is one of the best fist fights I've seen in a movie in a very long time, where The Rock fights Dom for the first time. It's just like, it's so macho that like, it bumps up my male chromosomes by like double. Just watching it, I feel like I could go bench press like 500 pounds.
That one's all those up on HBO if you want to watch them. Princess Diaries 1 and 2, there's really not a lot to say about it. Minus the fact that Sean, he's not a big Anne Hathaway fan.
I don't like Anne Hathaway for a lot of different reasons. But those are really sweet, charming movies. And they were made at an earlier time when she wasn't so full of herself. And Julie Andrews is in them, and I can't say enough amazing things about her. And they say that they want to make another one, and I think that would be great if they did. Because, like I said, they're sweet and charming, and it's a fun franchise. There are certain things that Anne Hathaway has done that I think that they could go back and revisit. The one with Meryl Streep, Devil Wears Prada. There's another Devil Wears Prada book that's set in that world, that they remade another movie. Those characters are so perfectly realized that you could do another movie and it wouldn't be that bad. But in person, Anne Hathaway is just not a nice person.
I'm behind a Devil Wears Prada sequel. All for it.
All for that. If they get everybody back, Streep has to come back. Emily Blunt has to come back. Anne Hathaway can stay home if she wants to.
If she chooses. All right. We got the Rocky franchise on Showtime, plus Creed, which is on Hulu, I believe. What is the worst film in the franchise if you had to pick between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and Rocky Reboot? Creed. If you had to pick one, which would you pick?
5. I mean, Rocky 5 is, it has to be the worst. It's the one where the franchise was completely out of gas. And even the fight at the end, it's not even a traditional fight. It's like a street fight.
Yeah.
And we talked about, before the podcast started, we were joking about the effects that they used to convey Rocky's, you know, mental instability, which were just comically bad. Like, they're just really
like a bloody Mickey. He's gonna be like, "Good, he's gonna murder you."
Right. But even 4, which everybody has a lot of, and I love 4 too, believe me. I think 4 is amazing. But it's so like patriotic. It's like over the top patriotic. It's like getting hit in the head, in the forehead, like by America.
Is that the one where James Brown sings the
"Living in America"?
Yeah, okay,
of course. Yeah, it has a like a 4-minute musical sequence in the middle of it of just James Brown singing "Living in America."
So that whole music video was actually in the movie, basically
in the middle of the movie. Yes, they just dropped it in the middle. But Rocky IV has an amazing soundtrack, also.
Yeah, absolutely,
that has that going for it. But after Rocky wins, all of the Rocky movies ended at the final fight, right? Like,
yeah,
right.
He sorry for spoilers, but he loses in the first one, and then he has a rematch in the second one, and then he fights Clubber Lang in the third one. At the end of the fourth one, Stallone gives himself an additional half hour where he addresses the crowd. Do you remember he talks to the Russian audience and he's like, we could get along, you could get along. And like, there's a Gorbachev stand in like up in the press box.
He tears down the wall single-handedly.
It's so
terrible.
It's so bad. It's bad. It's funny to go back and rewatch them and revisit them. But then we were saying that like the franchise kind of rebounded and went out on a really nice high note with Rocky Balboa, which was a sweet little tribute to what those movies were, what they could have been. But he keeps bringing Stallone. He keeps bringing the character back. Stallone won't let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one that I think. Well, you know, it'll maybe they just next good one they have. They'll be like, we just got to kill it.
It's done. Creed 2, the sequel that they're making to Creed, is going to be Michael B. Jordan fighting Ivan Drago's son.
It kind of sounds like a stupid idea to me. Like they have to. Yeah,
I agree. Well, because Drago killed his father.
Yeah, so I mean, I get it. I get it, but it's just like it just sounds like they're trying to recreate the stuff from the original, and it's just, I don't think that, I mean, it might be well done, but.
Are there any front runners to play Ivan Drago's son?
Well, they hired a kid, and he's out of the professional boxing circuit. I mean, he's not an actor. You know, they hired some muscle-bound dude. Who's going to just be a machine like Drago was?
They could have gotten like Tom Felton, but then like got a body double, did like the Steve Rogers, where they like, you know, just put Tom Felton's face on it, but then keep the really buff dude behind it. I think that would have been a good casting.
That'd be pretty funny.
That's mine on that one. Yeah, well,
they got to bring Dolph back, right? They got to bring Lundgren back. He's got to be. He's been on the Expendables movies with Stallone, so.
Absolutely. So which Rocky was it where they had the robot?
Four.
That's what I thought. Like Christmas, they had the little robot thing. Okay. So
if you actually go back and rewatch Four now, there's like several music videos in that. Not only the James Brown one, but when Rocky gets behind the car of his sports car, and he drives to the song "No Easy Way Out." Which, if we have a producer, I hope they overlay this over me talking about this. It's him driving behind the wheel of the car, and he's remembering the entire Apollo death fight, which we just watched 15 minutes prior to this sequence. Right. We have to rewatch it again through it, and it's the entire song set in the middle of this movie.
It's basically
that movie
like
must be 4 hours long. Yes.
That's what I think of now when I think.
But instead of musical cues, they played the entire songs.
Right. Great stuff. All right, so we've reached the end of the podcast. All of these film franchises are available on streaming for you to watch. Sean, tell us a little bit before you go about Awards Blend. Tell us where we can follow you on Twitter. Talk about, you know, Cinema Blend.
Awards Blend is a new podcast that we've launched, and we do it live on different days, but we're trying to do it once a week, and it's focused on the ongoing Oscar race. We started it back in December. It's myself, it's Jake Hamilton, it's Kevin McCarthy. The three of us are old friends who are members of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, and we are talking about all the films that are in the Oscar race all the way through the Academy Awards in the beginning of March. But we also dive into movie news. We're going to talk about Black Panther reactions, and we're going to talk about Kevin met John Travolta in a restaurant in Los Angeles and decided to just pepper him with face-off quotes, and Travolta was totally into it. And so they ended up like quoting half the movie at each other, which is super bizarre. We all go out to junkets and we do a lot of these interviews, and we have weird celebrity encounters. And so we try and bring those stories back to the podcast. But we've done this will be our sixth one. So it's still relatively new, but we're having a lot of fun doing it. And we plug you guys because we're growing this whole network of podcasts. Woo-hoo. So if you're listening to Cord Cutters, go over to Awards Blend and give us a subscribe and a like and a rating. And hopefully you'll tune into both shows.
Absolutely. Where can they follow you on Twitter, Sean?
I am at Sean_O'Connell, S-E-A-N, and it's because there is a mixed martial arts fighter named Sean O'Connell who apparently has really entertaining weigh-in videos, and he has a Twitter feed before I do. And then I'm on Cinema Blend all the time, daily, gearing the content that you guys like to read on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. You can follow the Cord Cutter Podcast at Cord Cutter Pod. Guess what, Adrian?
What?
Another three followers.
Woo!
Yeah, that's right. Coming up in the world, doing big things. We're at the big number 3-1. We're going to hit 3-2 before too long. I just feel it. So So follow us at Cord Cutter Pod. Drop us a review on iTunes. Leave us a review. Give us some constructive criticism. Get us up on the top list. We deserve to be there, I feel like. Tune in next week for our Altered Carbon episode. We're going to be talking about the show, our reactions to it, and all the WTF factor of what we've seen in the trailers. Hopefully it's there in the series as well. Until next time, guys, TV is overrated. Keep on cord cutting.